What's up, everybody? We got a good one for you this week. We're coming to you from the Illinois S3DA state competition. We were up there in Springfield on Saturday and got to record. During that, we got to talk to the retiring coordinator, Steve Groom, and the incoming coordinator, Josh White, as well. So we talked about that. We also got into deer studies and a couple other things as well. I think you guys are going to enjoy the conversations, the interviews. So let's get into it on episode 151. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, we're here at the Illinois S3DA State Indoor Shoot up at the Orr Building in Springfield, Illinois. Come up here last year to this shoot, and it looks like there's another good crowd this year, a lot of shooters. We just talked to one of our buddies who's got two shooters now, and there were 15 in his boys' age group, and I didn't ask about his girls' age group, but it sounded like they were both having good days after a little bit of trouble with one of them maybe, but they got that all figured out. There's tons of bow cases lined up over here, lots of jerseys, lots of kids shooting. It's really good to see this kind of thing. We talked about that before. Anytime we've talked to Steve, you know, just what's going on with the S3DA, what they do. Getting kids into archery, teaching them the discipline of it, giving them something to do, especially for those kids that maybe aren't into the traditional sports and things like that, gives them opportunities to find some kind of community and something to do, extracurricular, and then even gives them opportunities for scholarships going to college and stuff. We've talked to enough college coaches now at these kind of events that kind of eye-opening how much money really is out there for shooters in the archery space. It kind of surprised me the amount of scholarships that they're able to give out. And it's not all necessarily full scholarships, but anything helps, especially if you're talking about these junior colleges. The partial scholarships could go a long way towards the education and kids getting to shoot while they're there. So it's a really good organization, really good event. We thank Steve for having us up here. And we're going to talk about a few different things today on this show while we're here. And then if we get any guests on, we'll have them on as well. But we're just going to kind of see how the rest of the day goes here. They're about halfway done shooting or halfway done with the day. I think they're on getting close to their final rounds of shooting, and then they'll do their podium stuff and scoring and things like that. So stick with us. We'll have some good conversation coming up here from the Illinois S3DA Indoor State Shoot. If you're like most hunters out there, at some point you've dreamed of having a piece of hunting ground to call your own. Maybe you finally decided to make those dreams a reality. If so, you need to talk to our guy, Rodney Hawkins. Rodney is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. If you haven't heard of them, they aren't your average real estate company. While they do deal in traditional residential and commercial real estate, their specialty is recreational and farm ground. With agents like Rodney serving across the state of Illinois, no matter what you're looking for, they can find it. Even if you want to sell what you already have to upgrade, downgrade, reinvest, whatever, they've got you covered. For more information, you can contact Rodney at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. On top of what he does for MFL, Rodney also has his own company called RG Outdoors. They currently carry hard and soft-sided blinds, blind chairs, tree stands, and cameras from Radix Hunting, Tacticam trail cameras, Fission e-bikes, and he's adding new stuff all the time. I've personally used all of these products, and I'm beyond happy with every one of them. The Fission e-bike is a game changer, and you will not find a better one for the price. If you're interested in anything RG Outdoors has to offer, you can send them a message to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. We were on the way up here, and I was trying to think of things that we could talk about while we're at the show between guests, if we have guests on, anything like that. And oddly enough, we're listening to a sports show.
Oddly.
And, well, that's not the odd part.
No, not really for us.
The odd part is, one of their trivia questions for the day, they do like a segment every day that they do trivia, and some of it's sports, and then they have a random one. And where their random question was something to the effect of, according to the NDA, which for those of you who don't know, it's National Deer Association, used to be the QDMA, which is Quality Deer Management Association. I don't remember exactly when they switched. But anyway, so according to them, which state had the highest percentage of mature bucks harvested was essentially the question. And the answer was Louisiana, which
was not on my radar by a long shot.
No, I was definitely thinking Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, that ballpark. But we're getting talking about it, and it's like there's so many different variables there that what could constitute a mature buck or what kind of they were looking at as far as that goes, because you could be in the UP of Michigan and a mature buck is definitely, well, we got a guy here with an arrow through one of his fletchings. That's how you know your bow's shooting pretty consistent.
That's how you know.
Everything's pretty locked on for that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So we, if you're like in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, a mature buck might be 2.5 years old. If you're in Pennsylvania, it may be 3.5 years old. If you're in parts of Iowa and Illinois, it might be 5.5.
Yeah, I don't. There has to be parameters there. I have no idea what they are.
And it's hard to, for me, to say, okay, they lead in mature buck percentage, because if you just throw, say a mature buck is anything over 2.5, well, I'm not sure that you could kill a 2.5, you could kill a 3.5 year old buck almost every year if you got any place to hunt in Illinois, I would think, especially if you're going with a firearm.
Well, also is if you only kill 5 deer and 3 of them are mature, that's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah, if the harvest numbers in total are lower.
Harvest numbers are, I mean, obviously the higher harvest number, the higher amount of mature deer you have to kill. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to look that up.
And the hunting numbers, too, because that's another thing, which is the reason why the bucks don't necessarily get to the certain age in some states, like Pennsylvania, Michigan. There's so many. I forget what it is in Pennsylvania. It's an ungodly amount of people that hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Per square mile. It's crazy. But you start figuring that in. How many people are deer hunting in Louisiana versus Pennsylvania?
Right.
The mature buck harvest, like you said, there's less. It should be a higher percentage, you would think.
Well, you would think so.
But that's maybe kind of an overarching discussion on that is, with all these studies and stuff, I did the Full Draw Friday episode yesterday. We're recording this on Saturday. But I did it yesterday on a study that the MSU Deer Lab had published, and it was deer movement based on time of year and temperature. So, like, they were basically saying, does temperature really affect deer movement? Well, yes, obviously it does. What I took away from their chart was that the max number was 500 yards average per hour, and most of the year it was probably average 300 yards per hour, what these bucks were moving in the daylight.
Really?
So, but it goes back to these studies like the one we were just talking about. There's so many variables with wildlife, and it can change from, well, what deer herd are they studying? If they got those numbers from a deer herd in Louisiana or Mississippi, where they're at, or Texas or Oklahoma or Iowa, it's going to be different than what it would be on the complete other side of the country, or their range, I would think.
Yeah, range, topography, weather.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're talking about, because that study in particular was, like, the low numbers was like 25 to 35 degrees or something like that.
Okay.
So if you're in Michigan, 25 to 35 degrees throughout the fall and winter, probably pretty common. If you're in South Texas, almost never.
If you're in the upper UP, heck, that's like a spring day.
Exactly.
You know?
So that in its own, it's just, to me, it's hard to gain a lot of information from those types of studies and put a lot of stock into them just because of all those things.
That would take a pretty extensive study throughout a lot of the whitetail nation to be able to, in my mind, to come up with, I mean, unless you just default, okay, we are in X, and this is what we did here. So if you don't live in X, it's always different.
Right. I think there's certain conclusions that you can draw that are probably similar. You know, like deer are going to move more in the evening, last couple hours of the evening.
Right.
And they're going to move more in the first couple hours of the day. Like, that's probably going to stand true throughout the whitetail range. But, yeah, I think when they do these studies, the best thing they could probably do is quantify it by saying, hey, we're this study for deer in blank, Mississippi, this is what we found. Not for whitetail bucks, this is where their average movement pattern was.
Are we in flat ground? Are we climbing mountains?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of variables there. Just like any other study, though, there's tons of variables anywhere you go.
I think you can easily put too much stock into one of them. If you're just looking at, even like that, if you're just looking at that NDA study, while the highest percentage of mature bucks are being killed in Louisiana, I need to go to Louisiana, hunt mature bucks. You know?
Right.
Until you get to Louisiana
to see the mature bucks.
Yeah, you think that's a good idea. So that's something where I think if they would quantify it and say, hey, this is what we've studied throughout here based on this, this, and this, it should be pretty rich. And I'm sure if you look into the study, you can probably find that. But that's not what they're posting on social media. They're just posting, hey, we studied these white-tailed deer, and this is what they're doing. And nothing against them. Probably not their goal. I just think it would be more helpful if they'd say, hey, put on the chart, like white-tailed deer in X range. Because you can't collar enough whitetails, let alone bucks, throughout their range to have any kind of definitive study
right
across the board. And you're talking all the way over to Wyoming. I think there's actually a decent population in, like, is it New Jersey or something like that?
Look, didn't know there's anything decent in New Jersey.
Well, population.
Oh.
But, you talk about upstate New York, all the way from as far north almost to the Canada border, all the way south Florida.
I know, right. New York, I know, has a decent amount of deer upstate.
Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of difference in what could be going on. So those studies, I thought that was interesting that they published Louisiana as the top highest percentage of mature bucks, and for whatever variables or whatever limitations they put on it, I'm sure that was true.
It still is what it is, in whatever parameters that study was within.
But like you said, it's just like any other study. You can pretty much, if you take 1,000 people from New York and poll them on something political, you've got a pretty good idea what they're going to say.
Correct.
And then you can just publish that as, hey, we pulled 1,000 people, 1,000 Americans.
Well, that's what they do all the time.
Yeah. So
allegedly.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's the same thing. Essentially, you can. Confirmation bias, I guess. You can come up with what you think is the truth, or you want to come up with something that's going to shock people, like Louisiana is the highest, you're going to say, okay, but this is a mature deer and yada, 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 and then you can say, okay, it's going to be Louisiana or whatever.
100% not on my radar. I wouldn't have guessed. That might have been my 49th guess. I don't I don't know.
It might have been. And the other option they gave Louisiana, Mississippi, and Oklahoma. And when they do those quizzes, they write their own questions. So whoever wrote it was, like, trying to come up with other answers that would maybe be it.
Right, right. No.
So you know they have no idea.
Oklahoma would have been.
Maybe.
My guess, but that's
based
a stretch.
On those options. Yeah.
Based on the – but I'm looking at it from a hunter's standpoint and what I call a mature deer versus what maybe someone else does.
Yeah.
And you watch hunting shows and guys go to Kansas and Oklahoma to hunt, and you're killing some pretty nice deer out there.
Kansas would probably be up there for me, too, because there just seems to be a lot of mature deer out there.
Mm-hmm.
From not only just from TV shows, because if you watch TV, you're always going to see the mature deer.
But we don't know the percentages of those that are being killed either.
Right.
So is it percentage of buck tags filled, I would assume?
Percentage of buck harvest that were mature.
Right. That's what I would assume.
And I've seen some NDA studies about that before, in different states and nationwide, where they're saying, like, okay, this percentage of 2.5-plus-year-old deer. But even that's hard to figure out, because how do you know that deer's 2.5?
Right, right.
And if you're just basing it on antler measurements or eye-to-nose measurements, like, that deer I killed this year that was 7.5, if you just base that off an antler, one of his eye-to-nose measurements was 6 inches.
Yeah, which one?
Yeah, the short one. The inside.
Right.
The inside turn. And his antlers wouldn't have been – his antlers would have told you he was maybe a 2.5 or 3-year-old deer if you just went off the base measurements, because didn't have that much mass, like 4 or 4.5 inches around. And he's as a 7.5-year-old deer, about as a good idea as you can have on one.
Yeah, since Dusty had pictures for 7 years.
Right.
Six years, I guess.
I don't know how you how you say, okay, they're killing this many, unless you're basing it off that, or they're just going off of the people who are sending in the jawbones, and this is out of all these deer that we got sent in. But I don't think they got that many. They get that many sent in, I can't imagine. And even that has some margin for error, just like everything else.
Sure.
So that might be the most accurate way to do it. But I think aside from that, if you're just trying to go on measurements and especially self-reported data.
That'd be interesting to see what parameters they did have on that.
Yeah, because how are you going to say a deer is 2.5-year-old just based on his antler measurement,
right,
his eye measurement?
I'm not sure you can totally, obviously.
Yeah. There are going to be some that's like, okay, he's got 7-inch bases and his eye to nose is 8 inches or 7.5, whatever. Then, yeah, he's probably a mature deer.
Right.
But even then you don't know, okay, is he 4.5, 5.5, 6.5?
Right,
so,
right.
I don't know. That's why I always take those studies with a grain of salt when I see them going around the internet, because they publish in them and then you see them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, yeah, but.
Right.
But. Here's the numbers, but. Yeah. So, anyway, I wanted to talk about that after we heard that on the radio. I thought that was interesting. So, we're going to take a little break. They're getting ready to do some scoring, I think. You probably could hear them talking in the background a minute ago. I don't know if they're getting final scores right now from the last shoot.
I'm not sure.
But it looks like
more targets up, so.
Yep, it looks like they're maybe getting ready to go to a different age group. I'm not 100% sure. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
We'll come back after the break and talk to you guys about something else. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market. We've been using ours for several months now, and I'm continually impressed with the ease of use and security they provide. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results.
So are you ready for this to be over? Are you looking forward to being done? Bittersweet?
A little bittersweet. Never thought I'd make it here, and I thought they'd have to drag me out.
Yeah? Yep. So we got Steve on, Steve Groom. We've known each other for, I guess, a couple years now?
I think we're going on three now.
Going on three? So you've been kind of running the Illinois S3DA. Since we met you, I kind of got hooked up on doing the podcast and stuff. And this is your last state shoot.
My last shoot, yes. So we've got some family stuff going on out in Montana, mm-hmm. and I'm having some health issues, so we decided it's time to go ahead and hand the baton off for state coordinator here in Illinois. So Mr. Josh White from down south is going to take over my spot.
Yeah.
And we decided that here in the Orr Building in Springfield, our indoor state tournament would be the perfect spot to hand it off at.
There you go. So all that's going to be official.
Yes, sir.
After today.
It is, yeah. I'll still be around to help him out until June.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've been working together for the last couple months to get everything squared away, so it's a smooth transition.
Right.
But, yeah, we've got him all set up to take over. And then, it's pretty much there.
So smooth transitions are important. I mean, that's an important thing to keep things rolling in the right direction.
And anybody that knows the politics on the S3DA side, especially for Illinois, it's been rough the last couple turnovers. So having this smooth transition here was a nice get-together.
Good.
Yeah. What are some things that you've seen from when you started with S3DA to now that maybe you're most proud of or that you're most pleased to have seen grow or change? Or
The kids.
Yeah?
Yeah. We were sitting here last night going through the scores and watching the indoor overall scores, we had twice as many perfect shots.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Everybody from Little Adler Hubs, Audrey Moore, all the way up into our young adults that are graduating out this year. So
mm-hmm.
just watch the perfect 150s come through. It was amazing the amount of effort and time that the kids put in with their coaches and parents.
That's awesome. So moving forward, I mean, what do you hope to see from the S3DA? Just more of the same or continue to grow that?
The growth, I like to see the colleges that are coming in to help these kids get going, to figure out where they want to go. Of course, inflation's going up, but luckily and surprisingly, and pleased to see that the colleges are up in their antes.
Yeah,
good.
Donnie's doing good at recruiting. Ricky Souls has been, you know, doing good at the recruiting. We got some other colleges just outside of Illinois, like Wildwood. They up theirs is at a 19,000 this year.
Really?
So it's been, it's tickled me pink to see this, that they're actually giving us a reason to keep these kids going. We've got a lot of kids that are shooting here that, and we've got some in here with health issues that still, you can't stop them from shooting. I don't know how many kids that I know in the background have either just finished a surgery or they were thankful to get this shoot in before they got to go into a surgery. Yep. So it's been nice to see it all go on, see the faces.
Yeah.
So
the scholarship thing is something we talked about a little bit in our first little segment here. This is great for the kids because it gives them community. If they're not into the regular sports, it gives them something to do. But it's also a really good opportunity for them to get some school paid for. It is. That's something that really surprised me coming into this and first learning about it, was how much money was actually there. I said earlier, especially at the junior college level, a little bit of money can go a long way towards an education.
Correct. And then it all depends, too, on
you can take it if you need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
It all depends, too, on what the school is, the vocational, full
right.
college, full university. Some of these guys are offering credit hours. Some mm-hmm. are offering upfront pay.
Right.
Some even are offering full equipment and travel expenses and entry fees to the tournaments.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good deal, I think, for these colleges to help keep these kids motivated.
Yeah, yeah, definitely keeps them. I would say that holds some interest when they start getting into high school and they're getting into other things and there's other opportunities for them that probably helps. Does a little bit of a carrot in front of the horse kind of deal.
It is. And it seems like too often we've got the horse behind the cart
uh-huh.
and vice versa.
Yeah.
But
no,
and it's nice. It gives these kids a purpose. I mean, we've got them from all age range. We've got a bigger group at the age of six in here now. And
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
All the way through to, you know, they're graduating out of high school. We're looking at allowing a new discipline, but I don't see it taking off very well for those that want to shoot in the S3DA, but on a pro level.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that plays out. Josh White's going to play around with that a little more and see
right.
how well that does, but not something we anticipate taking off running right away.
Yeah. So that's basically adding a division. Is that what it
yeah,
would be?
So it'll add a division for the kids that want to go like ASA Pro,
mm-hmm,
but still want to be able to shoot with us.
Right.
Right now we don't allow the kids to be on a Pro ASA and then be in the S3DA. So it's going to close that little bridge.
Okay.
But like I said, right off the get-go, I don't see it taking off. Maybe down the road,
yeah,
there'll be more into
mm-hmm.
it. Not that many youth here that are in the pro circuit ASA.
Okay.
What
so
kind of age group are what does most of those
the
kids
that
about?
Look at that are probably anywhere from 12 up to 18.
Young as 12, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
go ahead.
No, I just it all depends too on what they want to do,
sure,
or what they want to chase, or how they're going to go about it.
Yeah,
right.
Have you looked into what kind of shooting opportunities are out west? Because I know both your kids shoot, right?
Yes. So my daughter, she took a She took a different route. She got accepted to Montana State University in Billings, which is a non-archery school.
Okay.
But she wants to pursue early youth education.
Nice.
And they had a great
Bless
package
her.
For her.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
But my boy wants to stay in competition. Mm-hmm. We do have S3DA in Montana, mm-hmm. and Montana also has a youth archery division out there.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's out there, and they've been in touch with me, and I've told them, you know, you give me a year or so to get in, get settled down. Maybe I'll jump in and help these out.
But
Yeah, it's Jeremy Garst. He's out there. He takes care of the Montana S3DA. He does an awesome job out there. Mm-hmm. So,
How many states is the S3DA in? Do you know offhand?
38 right now.
38 states.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Are most of those – so, I mean, there's 12 that are not. Is that mostly, like, coastal –
No, we're pretty much scattered throughout everywhere.
Is it?
We've even in Alaska.
Yeah.
There's two teams in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I don't know how they get to compete with everybody.
Right.
Parents got to have some pretty good airplanes for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it's interesting how spotty it is.
Yeah.
But even like here in Illinois, you run up the Indiana side from down south, cross over the 70 corridor, mm-hmm. and then you run up the Mississippi side.
Right.
And we got dead zones on both corners there. And
yeah.
So it hit and miss wherever you go.
Yeah. It's good to hear that it is that spread out, though. I mean, that you're the representative in that many states. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's we're getting there. Hopefully they keep growing. We get interest constantly. I don't know how some of them get my phone number, but
Well, you put it out there on podcast.
Yeah, regionally famous. That's why. Yeah.
No, but it's growing. I'd love to be able to see the program in all 50 states and keep going.
Yeah.
It gets kids off the street, gives them purpose, and then helps them further their education, and that's the whole goal, pretty much.
Very cool. Well, we know you're busy, and this is your last one, so we'll let you get off here.
No.
Anything you want to leave the people with?
Big shout out to Indiana Target Association, the Midwest Open, for setting up, all my coaches and line judges and the parents. So, and thank you guys for
taking
this
village,
on
right?
the air.
Takes a village, right?
Yeah. Appreciate it. Appreciate
thank
it.
You guys.
Right. Yep. I do want to talk about some archery while we're here. Before we get into it, you guys did just hear from Stephen Groom, the retiring state coordinator here for Illinois. He's going out to Montana, like you said. Wish him the best of luck out there. We wish the best of luck to Josh White, who's going to be taking over here in Illinois. I'm sure we'll get to talk to him at some point, if not today. We'll talk to him down the road about everything he's got planned for S3DA. But Steve did just stop by in the break here, and he was showing us some of the scholarships, some of the money that's being given away today. There were at least 50 papers he had in his hand.
Yeah, unreal.
From anywhere from $1,000 up to $19,000. And what he told me was they can use those as bargaining chips, too, as they go up to colleges, and they can say, hey, here's what I already have. How much can you add to this?
Yeah.
Or I
can
come to your team and shoot for less money than somebody else because I already have this kind of money. You know, so that's really cool to see that and get just more opportunity for the kids to go get a higher education, and hopefully they use that wisely and continue their archery career as well.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either.
None. I'm not even close.
Well, that's something that I kind of want to talk about is the archery kind of as a whole from when you kind of got into it back in the late 80s up to now, and not necessarily just like archery hunting, because we talked about that before in different podcasts, and not necessarily just the history of archery, but just some changes maybe you've seen in the sport of it, and people's interest in it, how it's grown, and then like equipment too, because that's obviously considerably different than it was back then.
So there was a pretty good amount of guys that would shoot outdoor 3Ds, at least in our area.
Mm-hmm.
But probably as far as the sport of it goes, there was some indoor shooting, but not a lot. You had to have, I don't want to say you had to have money to do that, but you had to have some really cool equipment to be able to compete indoor targets.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody had the extra spending cash to afford the equipment that you needed to do that then, or the people that I knew didn't.
Right.
And that's probably the biggest change that I've seen is, and I think it's a great thing. I think it's a wonderful for the kids and the adults alike, but the amount of money that people are willing to spend on archery now versus 35 years ago is astonishing. You know, the arrows, the bows now, the technology that's went into that stuff.
Here's something else, too, though. Like, at that time, you would have had to probably spend considerably more money, at least comparatively, to get really good equipment to shoot a show, shoot something like this and be competitive. Whereas now, I would think the entry-level equipment is better than what the entry-level equipment would have been back then.
Oh, no question. No question. The entry-level equipment was entry-level equipment. And you had, right. You know, they made virtually, they didn't have carbon arrows back then. They were aluminum, but they were different entry-level aluminums versus the arrows that you shot competition with.
Right.
And even the 3D circuits then, you had probably 8 out of 10 people were shooting a bow hunter class.
Right.
You had that occasional guy that had the money to compete.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had the fancier bows and the higher priced arrows and the machine tips and all the stuff that nobody had, and we didn't sell that many in the shop.
Right.
People weren't buying that. And that's the biggest change I've seen is the guys that were doing archery back then were doing it because they loved to hunt.
Right.
And I think you have, as far as archery goes, you have just as many people now doing it for the sport as you are the hunting part of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's probably a lot to do with why you're talking about 3D shoots. There's actually less of that probably now, especially in our area.
In our area,
there used to be.
Yeah.
But it is probably because guys were doing that because it was like hunting and they were getting ready for the hunting season, whereas now they're doing more of the indoor stuff as the sport, as the competition, not necessarily for getting ready for the hunting season or anything like that. And it's, I mean, yeah, it's good, but you're using such different equipment, unless you're in like a hunter class,
right,
to shoot this. The mechanics of shooting a bow are the same across the board. But it's not like you're necessarily getting familiar with your hunting setup if you're doing some of this stuff. So,
yeah, and I've seen all kinds of, well, I mean, I've seen recurves, I see long bows, I see all kinds of different compounds. But I don't, and I'm sure there's hunting classes here, but I'm not looking at a lot of them.
Right.
The arrows and the equipment that some of these kids are, I say kids, some of these kids and young adults are carrying around are, you know, pretty top-notch stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, that stuff is more expensive, I guess, across the board now, but it does seem like that's probably a big difference, where back then, were you even seeing that much of this stuff? At the time, like you said, you didn't sell a bunch of it in the shop, but were you even seeing a lot of this kind of equipment?
No, at the time, for the first several years, we were probably traveling to an outdoor 3D shoot at least once a week, usually on a Sunday, and we could hit an outdoor shoot once a week and not travel much more than 40 or 50 miles from home. So, I mean, let's say a 100-mile circle from us, and you just didn't see the equipment there. Most of it was long bows, recurves.
Guys were shooting the same stuff they were shooting in the season.
Shooting the same stuff they were going to the woods with.
Yeah.
So there wasn't the money. There wasn't the people didn't have the extra cash back then that I think some of them do now. Or if they did, they weren't spending it on archery.
Right. They weren't giving away 50 different scholarships at a shoot like this.
But you got to remember, back then, archery, at least in our area, it hadn't really taken off.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
I mean, there was guys that for several first years I was in the shop, we were still making steel cables.
Yeah.
That had the teardrops on them. I mean.
When did you start seeing more of that kind of stuff? Was it when the school started doing it a little bit? Because I know you guys used to have the kids up there to shoot, the high school kids to come up and shoot, like, for their NSSP or whatever it was at the time.
I don't recall what it was at the time, but when did I start seeing what?
More of this kind of stuff.
It was later than that, because they were using very poor, outdated equipment that the school had when they were coming up, and we were donating stuff just so that we could introduce them to the sport. Mm-hmm. But we introduced them to the sport so they could hunt.
Yeah.
We didn't introduce them to the sport so they could shoot and for the sport of it, right? And maybe we were looking at it wrong, but I don't know. It had been several years down the road before it really, I think, got to this point.
I do think it is cool now that it's something that you don't even have to be a hunter.
No.
To come in here and learn the discipline of archery and compete at it. And if you're a hunter, this may not be your thing either. And then there is a lot of overlap, too. There's a lot of people who are hunters who do enjoy doing this.
Right.
And people who maybe got introduced to hunting because they do this. Maybe they get here and they see somebody's camouflage and start asking questions about it. So I do think there's a lot of overlap there. It's good for both parties. And just overall, it's a good thing. And I hope that it keeps growing, like Steve was saying, and it just keeps getting bigger. And there are more opportunities because not everybody's in a financial position where they can, if we're talking about going to school, where they can go to the school they want to go to maybe. And not everybody can throw a football 60 yards or, hit a baseball 400 feet, whatever it is.
Right.
They're not always going to be the most athletically gifted. They're not, and you can't do that stuff coming off of surgery.
That's a fact.
Or right before you go to one.
That's a fact.
This is something that is super accessible to all kids, ages, shapes, and sizes, whatever.
Yep.
So I hope it continues to go down the path it's going down. I think it will. And, I'm happy to be helping them out as much as we can with getting the word out there, and we're glad to be here. So hopefully we can continue to work with them down the road and see what they've got going on. But we're going to take another break here, and then we'll come back and wrap things up for the state shoot here at the Illinois S3DA. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. If you've made it to this point, hopefully you're enjoying the show. And if you are, go over to our Facebook page and our Instagram. Give us a follow. It's Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group. That's Ridge Hunter Nation. You can go over there and answer a couple questions. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast or you watch any of our shows on YouTube or Carbon TV, you get in that group and just use it as your normal hunting group. Share your success, your failures, pictures, whatever you got. And we'll also give you some extra content in there. I'll ask questions on that, maybe do some surveys occasionally. And we'll also give you guys the opportunity to ask questions for any of our guests that we might have coming on, if we have them lined up in time and that's available. You'll find that at Ridge Hunter Nation. That's on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to see our scent line, Ridge Hunter Scents, our buck tarsal spray, doe tarsal spray, and our calming spray. All of our apparel is available on the website, and our food plot seed, when it is in stock, is available on the website too. If you want any of that stuff, make sure you use our discount code RHOPOD or full draw, all caps on either of those, no space, and you get 10% off your entire order. We also have our entire catalog of podcasts on the website, and our video series are available on there as well. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other audio platform, give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it lets you do. And that'll let you guys know when our episodes come out. They're not always as consistent as we want them to be, but we try to shoot for Monday and Friday. Sometimes it gets on a Tuesday or a Saturday maybe for an episode. And that way you'll know when they come out. It also really helps us without costing you anything. If you're listening to this on YouTube, hopefully you're already subscribed to the channel. If you're not, make sure you do that. If you're not listening to this on YouTube and you're not subscribed, make sure you go over there and do that at Ridge Hunter Outdoors, just like everything else. That's where you'll find our Fall Pursuit Show, Spring Strutting, all of our off-season vlogs will be on there, and much more. If you guys see a video or listening to a podcast on there and you're enjoying it, just drop us a comment. Hey, good show. Really enjoyed it. Something simple. Give the video a like. That really, really helps us out. And again, it doesn't take much of your time at all. You can also find Fall Pursuit on Carbon TV, and Spring Strutting will be on there this spring as well. So make sure you go over to Carbon TV. They have a lot of great shows to offer, and ours will be on there also. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate you tuning in when you do. Now let's get back to the episode. Okay, so we got Josh on, the man we were talking about earlier.
We were saying good things.
Of course. Fixing to take over as the state coordinator in Illinois, correct, after today?
So we have indoor nationals in Owensboro, so officially it'd be March, March 3rd. But
so in about a month.
Yep, about a month. So.
Nice. We were talking to Steve about some things he's seen since he's been here, he said one of the things that he's maybe most proud of or has been happiest to see is just the growth in the kids as shooters and stuff like that. And I wanted to get your thoughts on where you see S3DA moving forwards and, like, maybe some goals that you have.
Yeah, so Steve has done an excellent job with the program since he's took over, and it is growing really fast. The youth, or not the youth, the Eagle, Junior Eagles, so the little guys on the 10-yard line, that group is really blowing up. And mm-hmm. what I'm really excited about is, so it's not just compens, right? We're starting to see some bareboat guys that you don't see. Yeah,
right.
And for me, that's – I'm from Hamilton County, right? So we shoot a lot of compound, like sure. bareboat's not.
Uh-huh.
But it's exciting to see that, right? And, you know, I want to see that continue to grow. And what I want to see is there's kind of this distance gap from the north to the south. It's almost like a north-south thing mm-hmm. almost. I'd like to close that gap and you know, make a continuous run.
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff in our area that still, I feel, has a big void because we're, like, really concentrated in areas in the south.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, like, for me, it's unfortunate that Wayne County even doesn't, you know, like, we're neighboring counties, right? I'm Hamilton, you guys are Wayne.
Right.
We're neighboring counties. You know, you talk about El Dorado, Mount Vernon, Benton. You know, there's a lot of big cities that don't have nothing, right? And I think so my goal is to try to, you know, fill in some of these voids that it's kind of got this weird outline and connect it to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I think, big for growth. Like you said, even right there close to home, you can start there and start. There's a lot of untapped potential there, I would think.
Yeah. I know, and there's some of them towns that one time had a smaller club, but I think we need to go back to them and see. You know, that's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I know up here Steve's done some real good work. He's brought a couple teams on this year. And depending on how those turn out, right, there's a couple other schools that are really close to those that are like, hey, if it goes good, we're coming on, right? So,
cool.
So we got some really good potential up here. So I'm going to need some help up here, right?
Yep.
But we got some guys that are willing to help and put boots on the ground and grow the program. So
awesome. So what are some things that you've kind of – picked up or learned as a coach while you've been coaching? How long have you been coaching?
I guess I've been coaching for 4 years. My kid started shooting in 19, and then we had the messed up COVID year.
Yeah.
And then I was assistant coach, and then I've been head coach for 3 years, regional for a year and some change, and then now I'll be state coordinator. You know, it's really fascinating to see these kids grow, though, like especially when you get them down here and then you can uh-huh. You can watch them grow, right?
Right.
So my boy started, he's a junior this year, right? And to watch him and I got two girls that also shoot. One's an Eagle and one's a youth pins female. And just from, I'll never forget, like my middle daughter, Adeline. I had to beg her for 2 weeks to throw one arrow, right? So,
yep.
And now you can't stop her, right?
Cool.
So,
that's cool.
So it's really cool to just see those kids go from that transition, like, oh, well, I'm not doing that. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, boom, there they go, right?
Right.
And what is also really cool is you take a kid that starts out slow, and then all of a sudden one day it just clicks, and then they're just throwing darts, right?
Yep.
So it's super cool to see that.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you what got your kids into archery, but I guess –
So the
old man was part of it? Or?
Yeah. Well, I guess I've been bow hunting since I was 14, so about 25, 6 years. And I got frustrated with it for a few years,
mm-hmm.
and I quit, and then I made it a goal, right? And then, of course, that's what they knew, right? Dad's outside shooting his bow. So.
Okay, okay.
And then a couple of good friends of mine, Donnie Millenbein.
All right, right.
You know,
we know Donnie.
He approached me 1 year. He's like, hey, you got kids? You want to shoot? And I'm like, sure, we'll shoot, you know, and – of course, my boy was all about it, you know. And
then
as the girls got older, you kind of coaxed me. Like I said, it took her 2 weeks to shoot her
right,
first arrow.
Right.
And after that, she set sail. And the little one, she just kind of done it by default, right? The older two were shooting.
Uh-huh.
So
sure.
She's like.
But you think a local coach probably had as much to do with that as anything as getting your kids in? Donnie?
Yeah, sure. Donnie. Donnie was the big one, right? Donnie reached out to us. yeah.
Donnie. Is that your
fan
shooters?
Club.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some of my shooters.
Okay.
Yeah. One of them is my daughter.
Giving the big wave from across the room
uh-huh.
here.
Yeah. But, yeah, Donnie was the big push for me. Yeah. I mean, I guess had he not reached out to me, I wouldn't be standing here today.
Right,
so.
Right. There you go. That's cool. So we'll let you get out of here because I know you're busy. What's something you want to leave everybody with? going forwards with the S3DA and everything like that?
Come on out and see us for 3D. It's right around the corner. We're starting April 5th. At Wren Lake.
Nice.
So
nice.
That'll be our first shoot. So we're going to do – we'll swing right into 3D, and then we'll kind of salt in some outdoor target, and we'll finish up middle of June, July. So
we've been on that 3D course. That is
– Yeah. Yeah, that's a super nice course. Props to Wren Lake.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, we'll let you get out of here.
All right. I appreciate you guys' time.
Absolutely. So that was Josh White. He is the coach at Hamilton County. He's going to be taking over for Steve with the S3DA as the Illinois State coordinator. Cool to hear what he's got planned coming up. There's a lot of growth that can happen right here, right around us at home.
And Sounds like it.
And then throughout the state, of course, as well. And big shout out to everybody with the S3DA for having us up here. We're going to kind of wrap things up. They're getting ready to talk on the microphone and do their podium stuff. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. If you want more information on the S3DA, I will put links in the description where you can find everything. And if your kids got any interest in shooting, get them involved. I think this is a really good program. From everything I've seen, like I said, we've known Steve for almost 3 years now, and I think he's done a good job with it. I think Josh will do a great job with it from everything I've heard about him. We got some mutual friends and stuff. So I think it's a good organization. It's a good thing for your kids to be a part of. If you got some that are interested, definitely look it up. Check it out. If it ain't for you, that's fine. But there's a lot of opportunities with it, and I think it'd be good for them. So thanks for tuning in. We will catch you guys on the next Full Draw Friday episode. You got anything?
No, I'm good, man.
All right. We're going to get out of here. Thanks, guys.